5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This episode contains discussions of suicide that may be distressing to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Residue is not just another true crime podcast, but a necessary tool for those who want to understand the dangers lurking in the real world. Residue is created, hosted, edited, researched, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. If you would love to help out the show, the best thing to do would be hit that follow button and also leave a 5-star review. If you do leave a 5-star review, I will be mailing out cute little stickers and thank you notes because I do appreciate you all so very much. Just shoot me a DM and a follow on Instagram at Residue Podcast, Facebook Residue A True Crime Podcast, and on TikTok you can find two accounts. We have Residue Podcast for all the true crime lovers and Unlocking Your Memory, Champagne Chrissy. That is just a little something for all of your Gen X, 80s, 90s nostalgia needs because let's be honest, you guys, I cannot handle true crime all the time. You are about to listen to a story that is going to piss you off beyond belief. This is the story of Joe Cinque's murder and the friends who just sat there and let it happen. As always, listener discretion is advised. On the evening of October 20th, 1997, a group of friends, many of them law students, gathered for a dinner party. They brought wine, they brought laughter, and they brought with them a terrible secret. The hostess, Anu Singh, had made her intentions known to this group of friends. She planned to kill her boyfriend, Joe Cinque, not in a fit of rage or a moment of madness, but methodically, carefully, over the course of several days. And some of the guests had already heard her talk about this. Some had even seen the drugs that she was going to use to kill her boyfriend, and yet they still came to the party. They sat, they ate, they smiled, toasting their little red wine glasses, and Joe was the only one unaware of this plan. How do you even wrap your brain around this situation? Everyone that came to that dinner party knew the plan. And yeah, some of them probably brushed it off as a joke, but some of them believed her and they stayed anyway. Okay, maybe they didn't believe she was serious. Maybe they thought, whatever, she's just always so dramatic. She's never going to do something like this. And maybe some of them just didn't care. But either way, they ate, they drank, and they watched this night unfold. A night that was supposed to kill one of the people present at the table. And they did nothing. And you know what? They came back a second time for a second dinner party. Because this bitch fucked up the first time. And you know, the part that's so hard to comprehend and like wrap your head around is that these people still walk among us. These could be coworkers, parents, neighbors. These people once sat at this table and they stayed silent. And this story is not just about murder. It's about the people who watched it coming and did nothing. So, what led up to this disastrous night? Giuseppe Joe Cinque was the kind of person who made you feel instantly at ease. The eldest son of Italian migrants Maria and Nino Cinque, Joe was raised in Newcastle, a coastal city in New South Wales, where he thrived as a child. Joe was bright, studious, always willing to lend a hand. He loved spending time in the family garden, and when he wasn't helping out at home, he was likely deep in a book or talking someone's ear off. Joe was an extrovert. He loved meeting new people, and he never had a bad word to say about anyone. Joe is the type of person who never sought out confrontation. He could be friends with anyone, and people just flocked towards Joe. He was a glowing, amazing person with a great aura. Joe was the first person in his family to graduate from university. He graduated with a degree in civil engineering. Articulate and confident, Joe was going places, and in 1997, at just 26 years old, he moved to Canberra to start a new job. And this was a move not only driven by career ambition, but by love. Anu Singh was born in 1972, the daughter of two doctors. She was bright, ambitious, and from an early age, someone who needed attention like oxygen. Like, Anu was used to being the center of attention in any room, and in her mind, you know these kind of people. Anu thinks that she is the main character wherever she is, wherever she goes. She constantly needed attention. Anu was accepted into ANU in 1991 to study a double degree in economics and law. At first, in university, she battled depression and she had to take a break, so she left school and then returned in 1992, and this is when she met a fellow student named Simon Walsh, and she started dating Simon. Now, it is said that this was a passionate relationship, but it was also a volatile one. They fought all the time. And so when Anu met Joe, the relationship with Simon ended, and very quickly she shifted into this new dynamic with Joe. And at first, Joe's friends were like, yo, he is in love. My good God, he is acting so enamored by Anu. And I mean, she was confident, beautiful, intelligent. These two seemed like a power couple. But gradually, the dynamic began to feel off. And Joe, who used to be this extroverted, friendly guy, that started to fade into the background because Anu dominated conversations and dominated the presence in the room. She just was obsessed with how others saw her, especially men. And she often demanded reassurance of her desirability, like constantly. She needed Joe to constantly tell her how hot she was, how skinny she was. And you know, if she wasn't going to get it from Joe, she was going to try to get it from every other man in the room, no matter where she was. And especially at dinner parties, Anu would dominate the conversations. And Joe's friends and family remember that she would often say some weird and troubling things. They remember her asking questions about the afterlife, which that was fine, but the way that she would speak about it, she wouldn't let anyone else talk. She had to control everything that was being said, so everyone else was just sitting there listening to her. Then at one point, she would bring up shit like her past relationships with her ex, and I believe she was talking about Simon Walsh, describing him as this person that was so emotionally close to her that it was, quote, almost incestuous. She said this to her new boyfriend's friends and family. And at times, they realized that Anu often seemed paranoid. We do like to stay paranoid around here, but not like her. I mean, Anu came off as completely unstable to Joe's friends and family. And this was very concerning. His parents were deeply concerned, especially Joe's mother, Maria, who even started calling Anu the devil. I mean, they begged him not to move to Canberra to be with her, but he did it, and what are they supposed to do? He's a grown adult. They just felt like something was off, and their intuition was right. As Joe's friends and family are slowly watching him change while he is in this relationship with Anu, by October of 1997, Anu had become obsessed with the idea that she was dying from all of these mysterious illnesses. She was convinced that she was suffering from a degenerative condition, and she blamed Joe. Now, these two already have all of this stress on their relationship, and she starts to focus on the fact that she has an eating disorder, and Joe had mentioned, now this is on news words, Joe had mentioned once, well, why don't you just take EpiCap? And I know I say that word wrong, probably deal with it, but Joe would tell her to take that because that will make you throw up. And she said that since Joe said this to her, that made her feel unattractive, ugly, because Joe's telling her that she should probably throw up after she eats. Now, according to Joe's friends and family, he never said this. He would never say something like that. But this is the excuse that she is using. She also says that she thinks that she has a neurological disorder. So she keeps going to the doctors. She wants to be validated, and the doctors keep telling her, girl, nothing is wrong. You're fine. I mean, which is only making her more upset. All of these bizarre health issues coming from this attention-grabbing person, was this real? Did she really believe she had these illnesses, or was this just another dramatic scene in her little main character life? And now at this point, Joe is used to the drama that Anu is constantly creating, and he used to feed into her need for attention, and it got to be too much for him. And not long after moving, Joe starts to question their relationship, and he told one of his family members that he did plan on leaving her. Joe went out, he bought himself a new car, he's telling his friends and family that he's ready to get on to a new chapter in his life, and Anu can feel this coming. And she sees it, and she knows that Joe is gearing up to leave her. And a woman like this does not let someone leave her. She is the person that everyone wants to be with. She is the main character. Joe is not leaving. And she doesn't even hide this shit. She tells her friends, you know what? I'm going to have a dinner party. And at this dinner party, Joe and I are going to die by suicide. Yes, my friends, this is a suicide-packed dinner party, and you are all invited. Anu asked a fellow student and friend, Madhavi Rao, to help her plan this suicide pact. Now, these two would go to the library together, and they would look up things like how to kill people. Madhavi also tried to get a gun unsuccessfully, so the two settled on the idea of poisoning. You know, just two friends hanging out at the university library, just casually studying how to kill someone with poison. I mean, these are really smart, intelligent people. These are law students. This is nuts. And these two decide on Rohypnol and heroin. And being the dedicated student that she is, the devil decides to go talk to people who use heroin, and she learns how they get it, how they take it. She took lessons on how to inject it. She acted like she was learning a brand new skill. And then she went and planned her dinner party. So all of these guests that are arriving to this party, they know that the concept of the party is a farewell dinner. So this is a guest list of people to enjoy a farewell dinner for two people who made a suicide pact and decided that they would die by suicide, except for the fact that one of those people did not know that this was happening. It is October 20th, 1997. The guests gather at Anu and Joe's house, and Joe still knows nothing about the pact. This is the creepiest shit I have ever heard. So the dinner is winding down, the guests are having some coffee, and Anu spikes Joe's drink and laces it with Rohypnol. He passes out right at the table, and the guests, they say, okay, it's time to leave. And this is when Anu tried to inject him with heroin, but The dose had coagulated and it didn't work. So Jo survived. So she planned a second party. And you know what? That whole entire group of people said, yeah, let's try it again. So on October 24th, 1997, another gathering, the same guest come. These were people who had no excuse now. Many were the same law students who heard her speak openly about death, who had seen her unstable behavior, who suspected something might be coming, but they came again anyway. They sat there, they drank the wine, they ate the food, they watched Jo pass out, and then they left again. This time, the heroin had been pre-mixed by a dealer, preloaded into a syringe. So on October 25th, Jo awoke, groggy, disoriented. He was still alive. But on the morning of Sunday, October 26th, as Jo lay unconscious in bed, Anu injected him with heroin again. And this time, Jo would not wake up. And in the morning, October 26th, Sunday, 1997, Anu just sits there. Doesn't help Jo. He's there laying unconscious in the bed. She begins calling her friends, and not to ask for help, but just to talk. That is until one of her friends tells her, "You are a selfish bitch if you do not call an ambulance right now." So she does call for help. This is at 12:10 p.m. when she finally calls for an ambulance, and she gives them the wrong address and the wrong name. She calls herself Olivia on the phone. She tells the operator, "I have a person potentially overdosing on heroin." Lady who injected it into his arm says, "Potentially." When help arrived, Jo was already gone. The thing about heroin is that you can build a tolerance to heroin. So for someone who never used it, this would be deadly. Heroin causes extreme drowsiness. Your body responds by trying to violently reject this substance that it doesn't recognize. The use of heroin in someone who doesn't have experience using it can cause nausea, vomiting, a depressed heart rate, convulsions, and coma. Jo aspirated vomit into his lungs. He choked to death. He suffocated to death. Detective Sergeant Harry Haynes was the first homicide officer on the scene. He has dealt with many cases involving heroin. He said that when he went to look at Jo's body, he saw a pronounced injection mark in the crook of one of his elbows. So he goes downstairs, he starts talking to Anu at the kitchen table, and he said that speaking to her right away, he knew that she was guilty. She even says to him during that conversation that she did give Jo the heroin. So he placed her under arrest, and as he tried to put the handcuffs on her, Anu just fell to her knees and she was screaming on the ground. They had to forcibly put her into the police car. Meanwhile, Jo's parents are sitting at home. It is a Sunday, and every single Sunday, Jo always made a call home. Like clockwork, every single Sunday morning, Jo's mother and father would have some tea and sit by the phone and wait for their son to call. And on this Sunday, they did not receive a call. So they waited until about 5 o'clock p.m., and Jo's mom, Maria, calls his home. And a sergeant answered the phone. She asks, "What are the police doing there? Why are there police at my son's house?" And at the same exact time that she is asking this question, she gets a knock on her door. It is two police officers. They say, "This is about your son." And Maria just starts screaming, falls to the floor, and says, "She killed him. She killed him, right? She killed him." Family and friends had to go identify Jo's body at the morgue. Maria brought her godson. His name is Robert Tyrone. And Robert describes that they saw Jo laying on the table with a blanket over his face. They pulled the blanket down and Maria just collapsed into her godson's arms. They were there for about 10 to 15 minutes, but it felt like an eternity. Maria said that her son looked like he was asleep. In October of 1998, Anu Singh and Madhavi Rao stood trial. But 4 weeks into that trial, the judge orders a retrial. He believed that having two people tried together at the same time, that the evidence of one person couldn't be used against the evidence of the other. So, in some Australian states, defendants can choose to have a trial by jury or a trial by judge alone. This was in the year 1998. Now, they both choose to have a trial by judge alone. And Joe's parents have to return to Australia to watch the trial. They needed help. They needed support. Detectives on the case actually reached out to members of the Italian community in the ATC, and they had them provide meals, accommodation. They just had them give support to Joe's parents. They were just so impressed by his parents, detectives were. They were impressed by his parents' strength and solidarity. Detectives said that his parents sat in that courtroom with dignity. Rage was about to consume that courtroom because the judge found that Madhavi Rao did nothing wrong. So what that judge is saying that you can go organize a dinner party to kill someone with your friend. You can go try to buy a gun. You can buy heroin. You can buy roofies. You can speak about this party to a friend you know and brag about how Anu is going to kill Joe. And that doesn't matter because that means that you did nothing wrong. She got to leave. Next up is Anu Singh. She faced three charges. She pleaded not guilty to every charge on the grounds of diminished responsibility. In Australian law, diminished responsibility is a defense to murder that can reduce the charge to manslaughter if the defendant's mental state at the time of the killing significantly impaired their capacity to control their actions or understand the nature of their conduct. One of the strongest pieces of evidence in this case was the fact that a friend testified that Anu used to tell her, "It isn't hard to convince someone that you are insane." And during the trial, in the courtroom, Anu would put on a show. It is described that she would often lay her head on the table and sigh very loudly. She would place her hands over her face, covering her eyes with her fingers, but then she would peek through her fingers and kind of look around and make sure that everyone was looking at her. Everyone was paying attention to her. On April 23rd, 1999, the verdict was handed down to Anu Singh. The case had rested almost entirely on her mental state, her delusions, her claimed psychological issues. The judge sentenced Anu Singh to 10 years in prison, with a minimum of 4 to be served. Maria and her husband Nino exploded in a moment of pure rage, screaming at Anu from across the room. And years later, Maria would admit, "I wanted to kill her. I started to cry and I wanted to kill her." Detective Harry Haynes, who worked this case, described the courtroom proceedings with brutal honesty. He said, "The trials are clinical and the law is cold." And it was. In October 2001, Anu Singh was released from prison after serving just 18 months. And if that doesn't make you mad, she later earned a doctorate in criminology and law. Public outrage over the case led to a significant change in the Australian Capital Territory's legal system. Homicide cases could no longer be heard by a judge alone. But for Joe's family and those who truly loved him, no change in law could fill the void that he left behind. He had been so alive, so full of potential, this man with a bright future. Years have passed since Joe Cinque's life was taken, and yet the pain his family carries is undiminished. no sentence, no reform, no academic achievement earned by his killer can fill the void that he left behind. They watched him grow. They celebrated his victories. They supported his dreams. And then, without warning, they were forced to bury him. In the quiet aftermath of it all, after the trial, after the headlines, Maria Cinque said what no parent should ever have to say. You have a child you give birth to. You feed him. You look after him. And then I have to put him in a hole while she is still alive. Until next week, stay safe and stay paranoid. Stay paranoid.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.